Everybody, welcome to the Molloy program tonight. Thanks for joining us. Did you watch any of the hearing today? It was pretty astonishing stuff. I watched on CNN.com these disgusting, filthy television networks and cable channels and all this other crap that we have in this country. Nobody found it necessary to telecast or broadcast this hearing with these criminals, and they are criminals, from Goldman Sachs. What a collection of bastards. I've never, and I'm not going to take that route of, oh, well, the members of Congress are just as guilty. Yeah, okay, of course they are, because they're the ones who signed off on the legislation that allowed this to happen back during the Clinton years. But these swine sitting there at the witness table, what a bunch of scum. This is the best and the brightest. These are the masters of the universe. These are the people that go to the best schools in America. They get their degrees, and then they get out there and figure out ways to just rip and screw the American public and anyone else that gets in their way. Doesn't that make you proud to be an American today when you watch that stuff, huh? Didn't you sit there, and I know this is what happened to me. I just sat there and went, wow, man, God bless America, and God bless those four guys sitting there. And then those two guys, they are the best and the brightest. They're what we give to the world. Yes, hell yes. Made me sick to my stomach watching these pigs. Okay, I can't say the word that Carl Levin said, according to my producer here. But I'll change the word to shicky. Shicky. S-H-I-K-I. Shicky. Is that allowed? Timberwolf was one shicky deal. That was the, that was a memo that the Senate investigators got and gave to Carl Levin. And Carl Levin kept saying shicky over and over. I think he said it about 11 times. It was great to see. It was great to see the zombies, these dead bastards sitting at that witness table. Of course, they're not dead when they're out blowing hundreds of millions of dollars on 11-bedroom apartments in Midtown Manhattan, or are buying huge luxury liner cruisers, or taking their million-dollar-a-day vacations. Then they don't sit there without saying a word. What a bunch of swine. I swear to God, in a different country, a different time, when their testimony was over, they would have been taken out and shot. You know that. I know that. Brilliantly profane exchange in the Goldman Sachs hearing. Blogging on this was David Dayan. Carl Levin confronted Goldman Sachs trader Daniel Sparks with an email about Timberwolf, one of their deals using mortgage-backed securities. Do you like these names? This is the same way the Enron. They use these really manly names. Timberwolf. Ugh. Tom Montag, the head of the division at the time, sent an email to Sparks that said, that Timberwolf was one shicky deal. Days later, Levin showed, emails talked about selling Timberwolf, the shicky deal, as a top priority. In fact, Goldman sold hundreds of millions of dollars on the deal to investors after everybody in the company were talking about that shicky deal. Huh? Boy, we really pumped it to him on that one, didn't we? Huh? In a made-for-John-Stewart moment, Carl Levin asked again and again about the Shickey deal, and Sparks tried to dodge, but the conclusion was clear. Goldman Sachs knew Timberwolf was bad, and yet not only marketed it to investors, but marketed it as a top priority. Susan Collins, following up, could not get a straight answer from Sparks over whether he thought Goldman Sachs had a duty to act in the best interests of their clients, yada, yada, yada. Goldman Sachs, Senator Collins, does not act in the best interest of its clients. These predatory bankers never do. They're not capitalism. Oh, Senator Collins. Capitalism is not a system designed to develop a merchant class, to develop a middle class, to share wealth. That's not the function of capitalism. The function of capitalism is to provide just untold riches to the 2 or 3%, if it's that high, at the very top of this pile of seething humanity. The 2 or 3% that owns everything, that dictates policy, that turns people into slaves, that exploits natural resources, that destroys the environment. That's capitalism. Please, Senator Collins, it's not about helping people climb out of poverty. If that has occurred in the bloody, disgusting history of capitalism, it has occurred as a byproduct, an unintended consequence of capitalism. Capitalism is there to exploit, steal, take, lie, cheat, do anything it can, to take everything it can. And the perfect form of capitalism existed in this country from 100 years before this country was actually founded up until 1862. Or was it 1861? Don in Baltimore sent me an email today. Mike, the grilling of these banksters makes for great TV, even if it is all about politics and political showmanship. It's an election year again. It's been like 19 months since the economic crisis meltdown. It's about time that the public sees the faces of the crooks that crashed the economy on television. Watching Senator Levin use the word Shickey is amazing. The Republicans are obstructing the reform of Wall Street the same as they fought to stop Obama's efforts to reform the health insurance industry. The Republicans are soliciting protection money from the same banksters and hedge fund managers and Wall Street high rollers who use Wall Street as a casino to rip the American people off to the tune of trillions. They deliberately crashed not only the American economy, but the world's economy as well. And all the time, while they ran their banks into insolvency, they were constantly skimming the profits like the mobsters skimmed the Vegas casinos in the old days. Washington and Wall Street are one big mafia-styled organization. The banksters and crooks are paying off Republicans and many Democrats like the mobsters paid off the cops and judges and officials in the old days. It's the old protection racket, kind of where the bad guys pay the cops and officials to look the other way. They've been doing that in Washington for decades. I've read so much for a long time now about how the Bush government let the fat cats of Wall Street run the whole country like it was their private casino. And when they bankrupted it, we bailed them out. Well, they laughed all the way to the bank. Today, it would have been great TV drama if they grilled the crooks on C-SPAN, like in the old days when the crooks would keep saying, "I refuse to answer on the grounds of taking the Fifth over and over." Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy in the 50s during Senate hearings took on the mobsters like Hoffa and Carlos Marcello, grilling them before the public. In the end, Marcello, Santo Trafficante, and Johnny Roselli and Jimmy Hoffa would turn it all into a Greek tragedy by assassinating both Kennedy brothers. It would have been nice to see the crooks of Goldman Sachs pleading the Fifth over and over today. gangsters, mobsters, and Wall Street investment bankers. They're all the same. Don in Baltimore. It is about 22 past the hour. All right, we're going to open up the lines. You're open now. I want to hear what you think about the hearing today. The number is 877-996-2556. If you watched any or all of it, what you could, it was blacked out of all media, as far as I know. CNN and MSNBC kept teasing into it like they were really going to show something, but then they had to let their anchor people do the talking, which just, you know, I really don't like that, but of course there's nothing I can do about it. So if you watched any of it, I'd like to know what your take is. We really had a chance today. It was like watching the tobacco executives when those predatory bastards sat there and said, no, we never manipulate nicotine, and besides, why should we? Nicotine is not addictive. You know, same thing. These are the real criminals in this country. These are the people who are destroying America. These people and their Republican and Democratic cohorts, mostly Republican, in the Congress. It's astonishing. And I didn't happen to see any or hear any reports of any teabagger demonstrations out in the hallways or on the steps of the Capitol building, the way the bastards were demonstrating and spitting on black members of Congress during the final hours of the so-called health care reform debate or health insurance reform debate. Where were you punk-ass teabaggers, huh? Why weren't you out there protesting? These are people who have stolen from you. These are the people you should be angry at, you phony teabag freaks. These are the people who thoroughly enjoy the fact that you've put together something called a teabag movement, because it further clouds up the atmosphere and gives them further cover on how to continue to steal and steal and steal. I'm much more prone to violence than Carl Levin or any of these people that conducted the hearing today. Knowing what we know at this point, and knowing that these bastards are going to walk, the SEC charges against them are civil charges. They're not even criminal charges. How many people were driven into the streets, driven into bankruptcy, driven into despair? How many families were ripped to pieces by these thugs? Now, we asked the same questions back during the savings and loan collapse. And, you know, in the 80s, and I thought, stupid me, hey, this will never happen again. Because seeing this tremendous cloud of despair and savings for old people, middle-aged people, young parents who are saving for their children's education, everything stolen, destroyed, ripped to pieces by these damn thuggish capitalist thug banksters, right? And here it is again. Only this time, this makes as bad as the savings and loan debacle was this latest theft, fraud, makes the savings and loan debacle look like what it was, a rehearsal. Let's see if we can get away with this. Let's see if anybody goes to jail. Okay, one or two. But let's see if we can pull this off. And if we can, we'll wait a decade or two and really stick it into these donkeys. Here we are. Rat bastards. Boy, I'll tell you. Lloyd Blankfein was on later on this evening. I didn't get a chance to see any of that. But you talk about the head rat. You know, just because this useless piece of human waste makes millions of dollars a day, he doesn't make it. He steals millions of dollars a day. You know, somehow he's in that rarefied atmosphere. He's one of the masters of the universe that Tom Wolfe wrote about back in the 80s. And he's nothing but a scummy, rat-infested, cockroach-head thief. And he steals, he deliberately steals from people. Of course, he steals from greedy people. Not just greedy people. He steals from people who want to invest. This should teach a lesson to people about investing with these so-called investment banks. If they don't learn this time, to hell with them. Let them continue to be ripped and torn to pieces. The problem with that is that so many of the people ripped and torn to pieces had nothing to say about this. Their investment portfolios, their retirement funds, whatever, were being managed by portfolio managers who got involved in this because of their greed. So here we are. Tom says the complete hearing was on CNBC and Bloomberg. Okay. Two networks that I very seldom go to. Well, I'm glad to hear that. CNBC. I wonder how many people were able to get CNBC, right? We'll be back. Stay with us.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Reg writes, and the whole thing was nauseating and predictable. I watched in C-SPAN 3. It went on all day, and I survived only by switching regularly to the doubleheader Mets game that started in late afternoon. Each one of these bastards was coached and well-prepared to answer every question. Nothing was accomplished. The thing that got to me was that the senators on the panel consistently thanked these crooks for appearing. Despite the occasional scolding, they were treated as gracious guests who were kind enough to respond to an invitation from the Senate committee. Puke. Waste of a day. Irish Dave. Mike, some are calling it a dog and pony show. So who's the dog and who's the pony? Following here is a list of all the good things that will result. Crickets. Irish Dave. P.S. One is attempted to use the word arrogance. That would be wrong, since arrogance is defined as, quote, the act or quality of having unwarranted pride and self.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're talking with Shannon Moore, who is a radio talk show host at KUDO 1080 AM in Anchorage, Alaska, and well known to people who watch MSNBC. Frequent guest on both Rachel and Keith Olbermann's program. Shannon, the former governor, I'm trying to think what to call her.
I think we call her the half-term governor, or there's several things people call her. Governor Grifter, I think, is really popular.
Governor
right
Grifter, the quit bull. Governor Grifter, I like that. She's making an awful lot of money down here in what y'all call the lower 48. How do folks feel about that? She's really struck it rich. She's soon going to have as much money as Glenn Beck.
Yeah, well, you know, she was getting as much as she could out of us.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the thing that is offensive to people is that we have a law here that if you're the governor, you can't have another job.
Mm-hmm.
Our state legislature meets for 90 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have other jobs. You know, they're lawyers or teachers or whatever it is they do.
Right.
And so we have a law that the governor can't because the governor's 24/7. So when she got her book deal, there were some complaints that went in. They were like, wait, you can't have another job and you're going to have to disclose how much you get paid and you're not going to be able to leave on a book tour. And it was, you know, and so she didn't want to let go of that money at all. And so she quit. And, you know, she had all these reasons, like that she was going to save the state money because of the ethics violations filed against her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she filed an ethics complaint on herself, and it was over half of what all of the ethics complaints combined cost the state was the one she filed on herself trying to get out of the Troopergate investigation. So, you know, we knew that wasn't true. We were trying to figure out what the truth was. And really, it was just as simple as she wanted the money. And
yeah.
So when she said things like, I'm going to help the state of Alaska from the outside of Alaska, and I don't need a title to do it, we really, in fact, that's kind of the joke. It's like, okay, so how is this helping Alaskans again? Interviewing LL Cool J in a pretend interview that didn't exist. How does that help us again?
Well, it reminds me of O.J. Simpson, who I guess is still looking for the people who really killed his wife and her friend. Remember, that's what he said. He would spend the rest of his life trying to find the real killers of the two people that were hacked to death by O.J. himself. But, you know, the thing about Sarah is that she really is inadvertently, I'm sure, but she is funny as hell. She's the kind of political character that you can't make up. And especially when she and McCain were running for the presidency and the vice presidency, it was just an absolute a comedy of errors day in and day out, except for one thing. She really does think that, you know, the rapture's coming and there are demons wandering the earth and, Obama was born in Kenya and, that she's really helping these candidates. My only hope is that she continues to make these appearances, that she continues to do her Facebook page, that she continues to be out there. And, I mean, what the hell? If she makes, $20-30 million this year, well, this is the United States. We believe in paying our clowns and fools and freaks and leaders.
Right.
So,
it's just money.
Yeah, it's just money.
I interviewed her quite a few times,
uh-huh.
and she was never the extremist that people see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she did things, and you know, I interviewed her once about an issue that had come up with a ballot. Mm-hmm. initiative, and she had come out and said how she was going to vote, and she was just going to take off her governor's hat, and I asked her about that wardrobe malfunction that
right.
you actually don't get to remove it.
Right.
And she laughed, and she's like, oh, Shannon, I'm not very PC. And I was just like, okay, that's all you got? You know, it was crazy. And watching her, she's really ramped up. She's not someone that, you know, after watching her campaign for governor here, I didn't even recognize her. Never saw that sort of snark, never saw the nasty out there. I mean, she made cupcakes for Democrats' birthday parties in Juneau. I mean, she you just never saw this. And the crown jewels of her governorship, her oil legislation and all of that was all super bipartisan. It took all of, you know, they got in project labor agreements, things like that to get that to pass because the Republicans didn't want her to have those things. So, you know, and watching her out there, She's so disconnected, and it's money, and she's not going to be able to buy back what she's giving up for it.
So, as in the case of so many people, the money has driven her completely over the edge.
Well, I think it's that, and I also think that it's really, you know, she has a remarkable amount of charisma.
Yeah.
And she also has a remarkable amount of narcissism, and that is really a perfect storm for who she is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, so, listen, you know, people chanting your name and carrying on like that.
That's scary.
It's addictive.
It's also funny. Shannon, thanks a lot for taking some time to talk to us. We'll chat again, okay?
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Take care. Shannon Moore of KUDO in Anchorage, Alaska, 1080 on your dial if you happen to live up there. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Watch my booty shake like a fat lady's belly. My style so stank, I better bank, you gon' smell me. Oh, you smell me, smells like money. When I come running, wow, Missy keep it coming. Wow, rock while I drum drumming. Destiny got the whole world freaking something. And we killing something, somebody go.
Get your news unfiltered only. Get your news unfiltered only with Mike Molloy.
25 before the hour, it's time for Uncle Mike's Story Corner once again. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner by Tim Wise, writing for Alternet. And the title of Tim's story is, What If the Tea Party Were Black? Let's play a game, shall we? The name of the game is called Imagine. The way it's played is simple. We'll envision recent happenings in the news, but then change them up a bit. Instead of envisioning white people as the main actors in the scenes we'll conjure, the ones who are driving the action, we'll envision black folk or other people of color instead. The object of the game is to imagine the public reaction to the events or incidents if the main actors were of color rather than white. Whoever gains the most insight into the workings of race in America at the end of the game wins! So let's begin. Imagine the hundreds of black protesters were to descend upon Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia, just a few miles from the Capitol and the White House, armed with AK-47s, assorted handguns, and ammunition. And imagine that some of these protesters, the black protesters, spoke of the need for political revolution and possibly even armed conflict in the event that laws they didn't like were enforced by the government. Would these protesters, these black protesters with guns, be seen as brave defenders of the Second Amendment? Or would they be viewed by most whites as a danger to the Republic? What if they were Arab Americans? Because after all, that's what happened recently when white gun enthusiasts descended upon the nation's capital, arms in hand, and verbally announced their readiness to make war on the country's political leaders if the need arose. Imagine that white members of Congress, while walking to work, were surrounded by thousands of angry black people, one of whom proceeded to spit on one of those members of Congress for not voting the way the black demonstrators desired. Would the protesters be seen as merely patriotic Americans voicing their opinions, or as an angry, potentially violent, and even insurrectionary mob? After all, this is what white Tea Party protesters did recently in Washington. Imagine that a rap artist were to say, in reference to a white president, he's a piece of blank, and I told him to suck on my machine gun. Because that's what rocker Ted Nugent said recently about President Obama. Imagine that a prominent mainstream black political commentator had long employed an overt bigot as executive director of his organization, and that this bigot regularly participated in black separatist conferences and once assaulted a white person while calling them a biracial slur. When that prominent black commentator and his sister, who also works for the organization, defended the bigot as a good guy who was misunderstood and going through a tough time in his life, would anyone accept their excuse-making? Would that commentator still have a place on a mainstream network? Because that's what happened in the real world when Pat Buchanan employed as executive director of his group, America's Cause, a blatant racist who did all these things, or at least their white equivalents, attending white separatist conferences and attacking a black woman while calling her the N-word. Imagine that a black radio host were to suggest that the only way to get promoted in the administration of a white president is by hating black people, or that a prominent white person had only endorsed a white presidential candidate as an act of racial bonding, or blamed a white president for a fight on a school bus in which a black kid was jumped by two white kids, or said that he wouldn't want to kill all conservatives, but rather would like to leave just enough living fossils, as he called them, so we will never forget what these people stood for. After all, these are things that Rush Limbaugh has said about Barack Obama's administration, Colin Powell's endorsement of Barack Obama, a fight on a school bus in Belleville, Illinois, in which two black kids beat up a white kid, and about liberals generally. Imagine that a black pastor, formerly a member of the U.S. military, were to declare as part of his opposition to a white president's policies that he was ready to suit up, get my gun, go to Washington, and do what they trained me to do. This is, after all, what Pastor Stan Craig, a white guy, said recently at a Tea Party rally in Greenville, South Carolina. Imagine a black radio talk show host gleefully predicting a revolution by people of color if the government continues to be dominated by the rich white men who have been destroying the country. Or if said radio personality, black, were to call Christians or Jews non-humans, or say that when it came to conservatives, the best solution would be to hang them high. And what would happen to any congressional representative who praised that commentator for speaking common sense and likened his hate talk to American values? After all, those are among the things said by radio host and best-selling author Michael Savage, predicting white revolution in the face of multiculturalism, or said by Michael Savage about Muslims and liberals, respectively. And it was Congressman Culbertson from Texas who praised Michael Savage in that way, despite his hateful rhetoric. Imagine a black political commentator suggesting that the only thing the guy who flew his plane into the Austin, Texas IRS building did wrong was not blowing up Fox News instead. This is, after all, what Ann Coulter said about Tim McVeigh when she noted that his only mistake was not blowing up the New York Times. Imagine that a popular black liberal website posted comments about the daughter of a white president, calling her typical redneck trash or a whore whose mother entertains her by making monkey sounds. After all, that's comparable to what conservatives posted about Malia Obama on FreeRepublic.com last year when they referred to this child as ghetto trash. Imagine that a black protester at a large political rally were walking around with signs calling for the lynching of their congressional enemies, because that's what white conservatives did last year in reference to Democratic Party leaders in Congress. In other words, imagine that even one-third of the anger and vitriol currently being hurled at President Obama by folks who are almost exclusively white were being aimed instead at a white president by people of color. How many whites viewing the anger, the hatred, the contempt for that white president would then wax eloquent about free speech and the glories of democracy? And how many would be calling for further crackdowns on thuggish behavior and investigations into the radical agendas of those same people of color? To ask any of these questions is to answer them. Protest is only seen as fundamentally American when those who have long had the luxury of seeing themselves as prototypically Americans engage in it. When the dangerous and dark other does so, however, it isn't viewed as normal or natural, let alone patriotic. Which is why Rush Limbaugh could say this past week that the Tea Parties are the first time since the Civil War that ordinary common Americans stood up for their rights. A statement that erases the normalcy and Americanness of blacks in the civil rights struggle, not to mention women in the fight for suffrage and equality, working people in their fight for better working conditions, and gay folk as they struggle to be treated as full and equal human beings. And this, my friend, is what white privilege is all about. The ability to threaten others, to engage in violent and incendiary rhetoric without consequences, to be viewed as patriotic and normal no matter what you do, and never to be feared and despised as people of color would be if they tried to get away with half the crap that we do on a daily basis. Game over. Tim Wise in the Uncle Mike Story Corner tonight. What if the Tea Party were black? Uncle Mike Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling and now Offshore Oil Reclamation. if you've been following the disaster that occurred with the sinking, the environmental disaster. Of course, it was disaster. The people that have died there on the sinking of that oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico. But if you have been following it, they're estimating now that this oil leak, at first BP, I believe it's BP that is the manager of that platform. At first, they were saying there was no leak, but of course now that's changed. And what we're being told is that there was no leak at the beginning, but when the platform sank, it ripped whatever the pipes were keeping the oil contained off their moorings, and now the Gulf of Mexico is being flooded with oil. They're saying now that it should, what did I say, Kathy, about 7 days? 7 days before this monster oil slick starts polluting the beaches in the Florida Panhandle and the Mississippi, Louisiana Gulf Coast.
Your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is indeed 10 before the hour. Here's what it says. Sunken oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico, about 100 clicks off the coast of Louisiana, is leaking petroleum at the rate of about 1,000 barrels a day. As industry officials and U.S. Coast Guard struggle to contain it, there's concern the oil slick could reach the shore and damage the local ecology. Blah, 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 blah. U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Mary Landry says experts are working around the clock to solve the problem. The leaks resulted from that explosion on April 20th. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration estimates it will take several days for the oil slick to reach sensitive coastal areas like the Chandelure Islands off Louisiana, the beaches near Pensacola, Florida. The coastal region is home to seabirds, dolphins, and marine life that provide livelihoods for many people in the commercial fishing and tourist industries. Yeah, we go down to that part of the Florida Panhandle, the Florida coast, and no matter where you stay down there, the part we go to, they have houses. There's no resorts. It's houses that you can rent. And anytime during the day, all I have to do is look out into the Gulf and see porpoises. The sea life out there is incredible. If you want to go fishing, you stand on the shore and cast in. And I mean, on practically every cast, you either catch something or your bait is stolen. What all have we seen out there? Sea turtles, the big manta rays, we've seen them sound. Is that called sounding when they burst through the surface of the sea? Sharks. I mean, the sea life out there is incredible. And the people who started developing those beaches years ago, about 35, 40 years ago, agreed not to crap it up. And I have to say, I gave up on Florida beaches a long time ago. About 25 years ago, a friend of mine said, hey, I'm writing a piece on some beaches in the Florida Panhandle for a travel magazine, and they give me a condo on the beach for a month. Come on down. So I went down and spent a couple of weeks, and when I got there, I couldn't believe it. Sand dunes, seashells forever, nobody. I mean, and even now, 25 years later, after Kathy's heart thing, we went down there for a couple of days for a break, and right in the middle of spring break, and on any given day, for as far as you could see in either direction, you might see 30 people. And the sand, the beaches down there, is that white powder. And invariably, these beaches are rated the top on Earth. I mean, Hawaii, South Africa, Australia, forget about it. These beaches along the Florida Panhandle. And now they might be destroyed. Well, capitalism is just a wonderful system for the capitalists. It is. For the people who take the money, for the people who exploit the resources, for the people who don't give a damn. You know, the people that run the oil companies, they don't take their vacations in a rented house down in the Florida Panhandle. They go to really nice places where there are no oil rigs or offshore drilling, where they go where the hoi polloi or where hoi polloi are not, just to stay away from us common folk. And they really don't care. Seashore ruined? Oil pouring into the Gulf? Price of doing business, you know. Accidents happen, right? Or stuff happens, right? Hey, just the way it goes. And the thing that we need to know, we who still live in this dying empire, we need to know that busted oil wells or oil tankers off our coasts are not an anomaly. It's expected. It's factored in. Oh, we don't factor it in. You and I don't. You know, we go to our little beaches and we look around and try to spend a week with the kids or what have you. And we think, well, you know, the beaches will always be here. No, they won't. Forget about global warming. And just realize that that's what capitalism does. Capitalism is about capital. It's not about people. It is destructive. It is dishonest. It's murderous. We have American soldiers dying and killing for capitalism, even as we sit here and talk about this. Capitalism says there's no such thing as too much. It wants everything, every single thing. It doesn't want 90% or 95% or 98%. It wants everything. And if it realizes that it's not getting everything, then it gets very pissed. and it starts figuring out a way to get everything. Repressive laws, enact them. Make corporations like people, rule that way. Unions getting in the way, bust them up and kill them. You need a war to steal somebody else's oil, send in the troops. Got to close factories because $20 an hour is way too much, and I can get the same labor for 50 cents an hour, close the factory. The 100,000 people that'll be affected, tough. That's capitalism. Isn't it nice? We'll be back after the break. Marge is on hold. Oh, my God. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Take some calls. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you would like to join in. Tom in Maryland, this is about the e-cig thing I was telling you about last Thursday and Friday. Mike, I really appreciate you bringing the topic of e-cigarettes up on your show. When you said that you were going to do a segment on smoking, I was fearful. I was afraid I would have to hear yet another diatribe about the dangers of smoking, why I should quit, yada, yada, yada. I was pleasantly surprised to hear that e-cigs could actually help me quit. I had heard of them before, but only in a few random newspaper scare pieces. None of those mentioned that e-cigs could help me quit. I'm 23 now. I've been smoking for almost 5 years. It's funny how quickly a pack a day will catch up with you. I want to quit now. I don't want to end up like the middle-aged to elderly people I sell cigarettes to every day. I cannot imagine how they're still able to breathe. Getting to the point, after hearing both segments, I decided to go ahead and buy a starter kit through the link at Superbeans. It arrived today, just in time, as I was about to go out for a real cigarette. I gotta say that these e-cigs kick ass, and I finally have hope that I will be able to kick the habit before I'm talking with a hole-in-the-throat microphone voice. Ooh. Anyway, I'll update you on my journey to quit with e-cigs. Tom in Maryland. And then Bob Alexander, who wrote the two-parter about those, wrote in, this is from Parade.com, article about Tom Petty. At age 59, rocker Tom Petty still finds happiness in making music. In front of Petty is a small bottle of Coke. His right hand twiddles with a thin brown stick. He says, "Got my electric cigarette here." He gives you a shot of nicotine and steam. The vapor is substitute for smoke. I'm using these to edge off of the smoking. It's just part of getting older, realizing you have to straighten up. End quote. Petty has reason to be thinking about his health. In October, he turned 60, and that's all right by him. As he'd like to say, if you're not getting older, you're dead. And Bob says in other news, found an interesting tidbit this morning. The guy behind ASH, A-S-H, Action on Smoking and Health, is a heavy-duty super lawyer, John Branshoff. Not a nice guy. Ash's website has the most misinformation about e-cigs I've ever found in one place. Great big lies on every page. Whoppers. It turns out that ASH, Action on Smoking and Health, is a major recipient of money from Big Pharma, which stands to lose huge amounts of profits if smokers start turning to electronic cigarettes. Pfizer makes Nicorette and gave ASH $100,000. Big Tobacco has less to fear initially from e-cigs. They will eventually when e-cigs start biting into their profits. But the people who use e-cigs to quit smoking are digging into pharmaceutical company Pfizer's profits right now. Yeah, seriously, don't do Googles on this stuff. Go to Bob's website. Go to superbeans.com/quitting. That's all you have to do. Just do that, okay? Sand writes in regarding the oil spill. Mike, it's almost as if Mother Earth is trying to tell Obama something. First the mining disaster, now the offshore explosion. Obama's advocating for clean coal and offshore drilling when there are two free, clean, sustainable sources for energy, wind and sun. I hope you will hear Mother Earth soon. Forget about the prayer get-togethers with religious freakazoids. Yeah, me too. Barack Obama going up to meet the graham crackers. That's incredible. Billy Graham and Franklin. Yeah, that's what Irish Dave calls them, the graham crackers. because Barack thinks he's going to get some points, the zombie freaks, the ones that believe in the risen dead Jewish zombie and all this other crap, will look at that and say, hey, he met with the graham crackers. Well, I'll be damned. Well, maybe he is a Christian. No, he's a Muslim from Kenya. Crazy bastards. Roberto Rodriguez, an assistant professor at University of Arizona, just wrote the piece titled Arizona, This is What Apartheid Looks Like. In the piece, it says this. Those who think there's an immigration crisis in Arizona are correct. However, this is but part of the story. The truth is, a civilizational clash is being played out in the same state in which the state legislature questions the birthplace and legitimacy of President Barack Obama, and where Senator John McCain competes with Senate hopeful J.D. Hayworth to see who is the most anti-immigrant. It's also the same state that several years ago denied a holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. and today permits virtually anyone, on the basis of trumped-up fear, to carry concealed weapons anywhere. Yeah, and that's just 1% of it, right? Dear God, I would be hightailing it out of Arizona. Don writes, wanted to share a letter to the editor that I sent Arizona Republic. With the passage of Prop 102 in 2008 banning gay marriage, Arizona voters indicated that discrimination is acceptable, as have so many other states. It is hypocritical now that the light of discrimination has fallen, as it always will, on the next target, for people to protest the recent passage of the law requiring proof of citizenship. It is naive to think that discriminatory practices will be reserved for any one group. The people have spoken. Discrimination is acceptable. When that unpleasant light swings your way, don't be surprised and don't complain. Live with it. And if you're not prepared to live with it, you better fight it when it first raises its ugly head against anyone. Don. Yeah, isn't this what the German theologian, Pastor Niemöller, wrote about? First they came for the socialists, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a socialist. And the trade unionists, I didn't say anything. I wasn't a trade unionist. You know that bit. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't say anything because I'm not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there's nobody left to speak for me. Well, sure, of course this is the way it works. Of course, this is the way it works. And then there's this. Steve in Seattle sent this to me. In Phoenix, somebody smeared refried beans in the shape of a swastika on the state capitol's windows. More protests were planned Monday, today, after thousands gathered this weekend to demonstrate against a bill that will make it a state crime to be an illegal immigrant in Arizona. Refried beans smeared into the shape of a swastika. Oh, man. Isn't that what you find, the sort of thing, in a dying empire, or an empire that will soon die, when the National Socialists in Germany did this? It only took about 10 years from the advent of their murderous discrimination against various groups until the dear leader, who had planned a thousand-year Reich, put a gun in his mouth and blew his brains out. Wow. Something about Hitler suicide and potential of a Glenn Beck suicide that just, there's a resonance there, you know? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away, away. We better stop.
Your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Blue's been holding on for about 45 minutes. He's in Jakarta, Indonesia. Hey, Blue.
Selamat, Mike.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Hang on just a moment.
Sure.
I'm going to move to a quieter corner here.
All right.
The people are very friendly here, at least in the daytime. I don't know that I'd want to go strolling about here after dark, but...
You're in Java, the island of Java?
Right,
right.
Jakarta, which is the northwest tip of Jakarta, of Java.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in the old quarter of Jakarta. It's called the Kota, or Kota,
mm-hmm.
a place called Kelly Basar. And I'm having a coffee right here by the old chicken market bridge and watching the people go by, and it's a wonderful day, and I'm enjoying myself.
Well, good. Well, good.
I hope you're doing the same.
Oh, yeah. We're just doing great. Breathing a lot of pollen and dodging tornadoes. But other than that, we're doing fine.
Well, I haven't been listening, of course, except a bit, you know, while I was holding. I was able to hear some of the show.
Right.
And it sounds like more good news from the good old U.S. of A.
Oh, yeah. We're just a font of good news.
But... yeah, sell them out, mate. Yeah, hold on. In any case, I was reading a series of articles the other day about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them in Melbourne Age and some of the other publications in Australia. And hello, yeah, are you there?
Yes.
Oh. And I was reading about something that I've never heard you speak about it. Of course, I haven't been listening for more than a few months, but
mm-hmm.
it seems that prior to the attack on 9/11 and then for some time after that, you know, there was this anthrax thing that was going on.
Right.
People, I think, mostly Democrats in your Congress, and people like Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and people like that were getting anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
And the thrust of this article was that sometime before the attack took place and for some time afterwards, a lot of the folks that might have been able to identify this stuff, where it came from and, you know, who made it and so on, were dying off under mysterious circumstances. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, it's a topic that we've covered quite a bit, but over the, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, because it's been so long now, we just recently, the FBI said that the case is now closed, that a person who committed suicide, I believe it was someone who committed suicide, who was a scientist at Fort Detrick. I think I've got these details right. Fort Detrick, New Jersey, is the place.
It's in Maryland, actually.
Maryland, I'm sorry. Yeah, Fort Detrick, Maryland is where all the bio warfare agents are developed by the U.S. government, even though that's in violation of treaties that we've signed. And weapons-grade anthrax, of course, is one of them. So this stuff had, and again, this is, yeah, we've talked about this many times, the genetic footprint, if you will, of the anthrax that was sent to people was exactly what was found at Fort Detrick or in these weapons labs. And the conclusion was drawn, first of all, they accused somebody several years ago and went so far as to almost indict him, I believe. This is so long ago. And it's one of those stories in this country that has just been deep sixed and forgotten about. But he was found to be innocent of the charges. And then recently, this man who committed suicide, it was decided that, no, it was him or something to that effect. It's hard to keep all this nonsense straight. But you're right about back in the early days after the attack, after the mailings, there were people who might have had information who had the alarming habit of turning up dead.
According to the article I read, some of these folks turned up dead under strange circumstances even before 9/11.
Indeed.
So, and in fact, some of the most important researchers and some of the people that could have identified this stuff right away didn't come from Fort Detrick.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the anthrax that came out of there was what was used to send to the Democrats in Congress and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff wasn't just floating about. I mean, you couldn't just go out and buy that
right,
on the street.
Right.
So that it had to have been somebody who had, you know, pretty good connections.
Right.
And they all conveniently turn up dead.
Well, the prevailing theory amongst a number of us in this country is that this was a Dick Cheney operation. Of course, you'll never find his fingerprints on it. But Dick Cheney is a loathsome creature who, you know, as far as mass killing and torture and invading countries on the slimmest of pretext, if any pretext at all. And as far as sending anthrax, that's just an afternoon's adventure to Cheney. Hey, Blue, I have to leave it there, pal. Thank you. I'm sorry I held you on hold for so long, but we'll chat again. Take care, Blue. Take care. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
To listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Eric in Canada writes, Mike, what they have in the Gulf is called a blowout. The pipe is broken off on the seafloor and is very difficult to control this type of oil release. Imagine an oil well blowing oil like we saw in Iraq, but underwater, under high pressure with 1,000 barrels a day coming out of a broken pipe with wreckage on top of it. This will all be submersible work. What a mess. Eric in Canada. All right, well, I think it's time now. We've had her on hold for an hour and 18 minutes. Marge! Where's Marge? Where is she, Kathy?
Kathy.
There she is. Hi, Marge.
All of my fellow truth seekers, you don't know how good it was to just think about you guys after I've been in here for a while.
Yeah? What made you think about him?
Well, I wasn't feeling good. And when I thought about you guys,
yeah,
I started feeling good.
Yeah.
So that's why.
And did your son tell you you got some cards?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
He's collecting them already.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't know what the hell happened to you, and I had a bunch of people email in and said, "Where's Marge? Did she turn into a Republican?"
God.
And
a vampire.
I said, "I have no earthly idea." And we were about to call your house. As a matter of fact, I think the day that your son emailed us and said you were in hospital, we, you know, Kathy said, "Well, we ought to call her." And so that was on the table, and then we got the email from your son. How you feeling?
I'm still feeling, which is good. You know, as opposed to not feeling, which is
yeah, that would be not good.
There's let me see if I can sum this up for you.
Okay.
There's two commercials. One is kind of new one for Pedigree dog food,
mm-hmm.
where this little chihuahua sticks his face in the camera and says, "I'm an optimum pooper." Now hold that thought. And you remember the Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah.
You know, from Up from the Ground. From the Bumble and Crude.
Up from the bow came a Bumble and Crude.
Yeah, well.
No, Jed said, I remember that.
That's what I've been doing a lot of.
You discovered oil at your house?
Well, not exactly oil, but.
Okay, too much information, Marge.
Let's just think of bubbling.
Oh, bubbling. Oh, good.
You know,
okay.
An optimum pooper, and let it go at that.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. That's wonderful. I'm more than happy to let it go. So how long?
But I came in here with a bone infection in both heels that hurt like a...
A bone infection?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it had open wounds.
Oh, well, that sounds pleasant, too.
Doesn't it, though?
Good God, what part of you is working?
My mouth is still working.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess that'll all.
And you know, and then after a day of that, they what is it? Atrib, something, and they started giving me stuff for my heart and my breathing and like that.
Oh, it went to war against each other.
One got to work in order for the other to function.
And what's it called? Atrial something or?
Yeah, atrial fib.
Atrial.
Something where the top of the heart starts is not functioning properly.
Yeah, well, we Kathy knows about that.
Yeah, I heard you mention something. Is she all right?
Yeah, she's going in Thursday to have a wire put in her heart, looking for Dick Cheney. Hello.
Anything to do with heart and Dick Cheney? Do not, you know.
I know. No, she has to have a little procedure. It's not like being ill like you are. So what,
So be sure and send an email to Rick so he could follow up because I don't know when I'll be able to get back to you. What?
Well, I was going to ask you, how much longer are you going to be in the hospital?
Beats the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Because, tomorrow they're talking about scraping a little bit on the bottom of my foot and, you know, and making sure my circulation is good.
Yeah.
And then there's something called, what is it called? Not.
Does it have to do with a body part that we don't want to know about?
No.
Oh, okay.
It has to do with skill care. That's what I was looking for. I'm going to be here for a while.
You're going to be?
Or be someplace for a while.
Oh, intermediate care?
Yeah, skill care is what they call it.
Skill care, okay. Hey, listen. Yeah.
A thing for your folks that may be interested in such stuff.
Yeah.
It's called Eden Care. It was a little tiny book written by a Dr. Thomas where they treat people in skill care and places like that with companionship of puppy dogs and kitty cats and birds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And planting flowers and like that. It's a real neat thing. From what I know of it, I would hardly recommend it.
Are you going to get a dog?
I don't know. Not my own.
Well, I mean at this place you're going to where they have dogs.
I might be able to play with one, but it's not going to be mine.
Well, if they suggest you play with snakes, just say no.
No.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to warn me about that. I don't like snakes.
All right. Well, how's everything else? I mean, besides this bone thing and the heart thing and the lung thing and the other thing, is there any, everything else is still working okay?
Well, like I said, the mouth is working and I think the Cubs won yesterday. So, you know, all's right with the world. What the hell could I tell you?
Yeah, that's true.
And God love my truth seekers and their goofy, half-assed, crazy cards. I can't tell you how much I love it for it.
Well, that's nice. I'm glad people responded. Hopefully you'll get a few more. I might give your address again just for the halibut out at your son's house in San Francisco.
Yeah.
That might be fun to do. All right. Well, listen, call in anytime.
Yeah.
And we'll put you on hold so you can listen to some of the show because I know they won't let you listen in a regular hospital.
Yeah, well, I love you for it. And Kathy, you take care now. You let me drop me a postcard and let me know what you're doing.
We'll do it.
So, and send me, I got your address someplace at home, but I don't have it here.
Well,
so,
that's
so put it on someplace so
okay.
I can write you back.
Okay, I'll do it. All right, Marge, behave yourself.
Yeah, well, love you too. Take care.
Watch out for Republicans.
Oh, God, if there's any running around, do I have your permission to shoot him in the foot?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Just go ahead. All right, Marge. All right, thanks a lot
You're
for
good.
Calling. All right, sweetie.
Be good.
Yeah, we'll do it. You take care and get well. Marge! All right, if you want to send Marge a card, I gave this last week. I'll give it to you again. Write it down. You send it to her in care of her son, R.J. Johnson. R.J. Johnson. And his address. Do you have it up on the website? Oh, you do. All right, well, just go to MikeMalloy.com, and it's up there. R.J. Johnson on 19th Avenue in San Francisco. Just go to MikeMalloy.com. There's the address. Send Marge a card. And the cynical, the better. Marge likes those real weird cards, you know, the kind where it has, you know, like a naked guy inside or whatever. You know, Marge loves cards. Who doesn't? I mean, when you're in there with a bunch of things that the docs have to deal with, she'll be fine. That's what her son says. She's tough as nails. Michael is in the Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How you been, man?
I'm all right. I thought you left the country.
Oh, no. Just had a hectic schedule. Mm. Just to keeping my eyes and ears open to the stupid Republicans and the crap they've been pulling.
Yeah.
And the latest thing, this Arizona immigration thing.
How about that?
Let me tell you, it is racial profiling.
No.
Front and center.
No,
you know,
it's
no
not.
No doubt about it. Because look at it this way.
Yeah.
You're not going to have any checks on Canadians, Irish, Scottish, because those are pretty much Caucasian. And they kept saying about Mexicans this, Mexicans that. I mean, what's going to happen is they're going to stop and question people of color because just they look, what's that word, illegal. And they'll stop the legal immigrants. They even stop the U.S. citizens such as myself. Now, there's three aspects to this. Number one, and I don't know if you have touched base on this. Excuse me. The first thing is this could be a repeat of Florida 2000 and Ohio 2004.
Yeah.
We remember they knocked off minorities from the voting rosters just to steal the election.
Uh-huh.
Arizona could repeat this, repeat history in 2010 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
The second aspect is that about 5 to 10 years ago, I took a flight to California to be on a game show. The game show was the weakest link, but nonetheless, it was a nonstop flight. And I was reflecting on that earlier today. And I know that sometimes planes have to make emergency landings in unscheduled places.
Right.
So with this kind of law, can you imagine somebody like me, a black man, I'm dressed in corporate casual clothes, I'm on the flight, the thing just happens to land in Arizona, and then you got these crazy-ass cops that want to turn around and snoop around. They turn around and look at me, and then they say, you look suspicious. You look illegal. I don't have my birth certificate. Who the hell would carry the birth certificate around them?
Yeah, that's the point, Michael, and that's going to happen, and it's going to happen to a lot of people. Hopefully this will be settled very quickly in the courts. But there's a lot of white people out there who now feel that they have a license to do anything they want to do. Michael, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Don't be a stranger. Damn it. Call once in a while. Before the hour, here's an email. Love to Marge from France. All right. Nobody's on hold? Huh? Oh, okay. Oh, there is. We just don't have... Okay. Ed sent this to me. Ed Kent. The U.S. is supposed to have a religion day in the near future. A religion day? I hadn't heard of that. As most claim the U.S. to be a Christian country, it is a bit ironic that of all the Western religions, Christianity has been the most murderous, prejudiced against others, and cruel. We have a fourth of the world's prisoners in our jails. Poverty and wealth both are growing and dominating our economy. I was once ready to go to war for my nation, but I'm increasingly ashamed of its actions. The Iraq War, which distracted attention from what could have been a restored Afghanistan, where we are now once again killing innocents, both on the ground and from on high. The U.S. leadership has not caught on to the change from military to economic might, which is now running our world. No jobs in the U.S. China and other nations have stolen them away. The rich are either spared taxes or hide their wealth in other nations. Some people have a dozen homes or more, while others are increasingly homeless, short of food and medical care. I wonder whether we shall start burning witches again, i.e. homeless elderly ladies begging for help. Such would do what the Republicans seem to want with our budgets. Don't spend on those who most need help. I can't understand how we could have produced such a political party of no to all humane things. The Republicans reminds me of Mussolini's fascism. Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. None. And they are going to send Obama packing. Yeah, Obama is God's curse on the United States. But you know what? In 2012, we are going to send him packing. We are, because God is a Texan, and he'll do what we implore him to do. There you go. Andy is in El Paso, Texas. Hey, Andy.
Hey, good evening, Mike. Yep. I'm looking at you on a video stream. Doesn't seem to be working right, you know. So I'm
no, I think that. I think that's your computer.
My click.
Huh? What?
But anyhow, hopefully just a little better, bro.
What?
I just love watching. I love watching you on this, man.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you do. I'll tell you what, Andy. Have a pot of coffee or two and then call us back, pal. I mean, I appreciate it, but... Keith is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hey, Keith.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Indeed. Great to finally talk to you. I would say about your radio show that it soft soaps the issues less than any other I've ever heard.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Thank you.
It was a few weeks ago, I think, that there were a couple of crazy people that were talking on your radio show.
Yeah.
One of them was a caller, and he was talking about the chemtrails.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, that's obviously insane. The other guy who's crazy is the president of Iran, who frequently says crazy things.
Yeah.
But you reported that he said something that seemed like the sanest thing in the world to me.
And that was...
It was calling for an investigation of the events of September 11th, 2001.
Right.
Which I never call 9/11. That's like a trademark.
Right.
You know,
it
act
is.
Act of 9/11. You know, come on.
Yeah.
And I think that the official story is complete baloney.
Uh-huh.
And like sliced a thousand ways. There are a thousand reasons that that's not what happened.
That's true.
And I think that fraud... has been really the defining characteristic of all the United States administrations during and since.
Mm-hmm.
And that the fact that there has been, and I assume will never be, any investigation of this lie really casts total, you know, casts into doubt the legitimacy of the United States government.
Well, do you think there ever will be a real investigation?
Well, I doubt it. I think that it's absurd, and I think that it's like the baloney of God. It's like the baloney of theism. I mean, if you believe this nonsense, there's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you cheap.
Right.
The story is absurd.
Right.
Everything about it. I don't think 19 Arabian guys with box cutters did it. I think that this was perpetrated. This was an overt action by what you call the Bush-Cheney crime family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Obama's frankly in cahoots if he's not going to investigate it.
Well, I don't know if I don't know how an investigation of that sort would work, whether it's up to the president to impanel a group, or whether I think it's up to Congress, but I'm not sure. Since they hold the purse strings, I guess there could be a presidential a commission. I'm just not sure. That's something worth checking into, though. Hey, Keith, there's the music. We're out of time, pal. Thanks for checking in. I hope to hear from you again. Thanks a lot. And thank you for tuning in tonight. We do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.